From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters, life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with Dr. John West, author of Stockholm Syndrome Christianity, Why America's Christian Leaders Are Failing and What We Can Do About It. Let's now join Hank Hanegraaff and Dr. John West in their conversation.
Francis Collins promotes this view of theistic, or I would say deistic, evolution. Collins, as a Stockholm Syndrome Christian, has bought into the surrounding secularist mindset, and so didn't want to delve too deeply into the evidence on the other side. Because the evidence that he offers, like criticizing Michael Behe on irreducible complexity and stuff, he offers rehash arguments that don't actually pan out. But here's why this matters. It's not just his view. He went on a crusade to spread this view to other Christian leaders and then by default to all evangelical Christians. So I write about in the book that there's this actually meeting at the Bush number two White House between him, speechwriter Michael Gerson, and a guy named Pete Wenner, who were commiserating about, they were embarrassed that so many Christians still were critical of Darwin. And so how do they surmount that embarrassment? Well, they have to convince them of the truth of Darwinian evolution. And so what did Collins do? He got millions of dollars from the Templeton Foundation to basically start a project specifically designed to convince evangelical Christian leaders to embrace Darwin. And he did it in the name of dialogue. Okay, that's fine to have dialogue. But he actually didn't want dialogue. What he did was hold these private confabs that would bring, say, leaders from Christianity Today, Reformed Theological Seminary, I mean, you name it, leading evangelicals, to privately only hear from people who were going to defend Darwinian evolution. They wouldn't bring anyone on the other side. They wouldn't bring Steve Meyer or Michael Behe or Bill Dembski or, you know, any of the number of other, you know, Christian thinkers who had critiques of Darwin. And the message of these meetings was, science overwhelmingly baptizes Darwin. Therefore, your only goal as theologians is to baptize that and figure a way to make it work. No one asked the first question was, well, is Darwinism actually true or not? And Collins has spent a lifetime, some people saw this during COVID, but this was even in the debate over design and Darwin, it was similar. Collins tried to win the debate by preventing a debate. His message was basically anyone who disagreed with him was equivalent of a flat earther. And so just listen to me and my, you know, handpicked proponents of deistic evolution and get them to buy off on that without listening to anyone on the other side, without, and you know, he would go, and Christian group after Christian group enabled this. I write about how the, you know, the official group of all the Protestant Christian colleges, the coalition of Christian colleges and universities, invited him to lecture people on theistic evolution and invited them to lecture college leaders, but did not invite anyone on the other side. And this happened with group after group that basically, because they were so smitten, oh, he's on the cover of Time magazine. So it wasn't just Collins, like with Stanley, you have to ask, well, why did Collins get such a big platform? It wasn't just because of Time magazine or the secular groups. It's because many avowedly Christian groups and pastors like sadly, Tim Keller, whose own denomination actually had views that were completely contrary to Collins' views on creation, they helped platform. I mean, it was Tim Keller who used his prestige to invite people to these private get-togethers to basically only hear one side. And when Keller was invited by Discovery Institute, actually by me personally, to do something similar for people to hear from intelligent design proponents, and I actually had a Christian foundation that he respected ready to fund it, Keller begged off.
Let me ask you a poignant question. Can Christianity and neo-Darwinism be reconciled in any sense?
No. Now, that's because what neo-Darwinism is, let's be clear, it's not just deals with age issues. It doesn't even just deal with common ancestry. It claims that life as we know it, biological life is the product of an unguided process. Darwin's whole point in his theory was to come up with a designer substitute, and that in his view, natural selection acting on random variations, today they say random mutations or genetic drift or other things, that was unguided. And what do I mean by that? That means that the end goal, so for example, humans or other things were not the end goal of evolution. They weren't anticipated. The process wasn't directed at that. It was radically, you know, dependent on chance and necessity, and with no designer, you know, planning or foresight. And so that's what neo-Darwinism is in its core definition. Now, can you have a type of guided evolution that is more or less faithful to certain parts of the Christian faith? Yeah, I think you can. I don't really buy that myself, and we could delve into that. But neo-Darwinism, let's just be clear, at its core claims that life is the product of an unguided process. So at best, the only way you can reconcile it is, well, really the two ways, and I talk about this in the book, you either basically deny that God really was responsible, and you see this when Collins is trying to say, well, you know, there's all this junk DNA, God wouldn't have done it that way, or you say that God himself didn't know the future, and so you're denying he's responsible. Or you go the route of Collins and say, well, maybe in some subjective sense, God did do it, but the evidence shows otherwise. And in that case, you know, you might be able to get along with your secularist friends because you say, well, I believe that God is creator and that he guided things, but I don't claim that there's any evidence of that. That's just my subjective feeling, and I concede that the evidence looks like it was undirected. So those are your alternatives. But imagine that. That's watering things down. And also, you know, think of the Romans 1 or Psalm 19 or the clear talkings even of Jesus, where he talks about, he refers to the birds of the air or the lilies of the field as examples of seeing in nature things about the character of God. So the Bible, let alone, you know, early church fathers, let alone, you know, Christian philosophers through the ages, have always said that God's book of nature points to him. And so people who try to meld Darwinism with Christian theism at the very least devalue that. And often they go further and say God himself doesn't know the future. And so that's how you can reconcile genuinely unguided evolution with you know, God not knowing the future. And then, of course, there are some issues with regard to the fall, because Francis Collins' compatriot in arms in establishing BioLogos was a guy named Carl Giberson, and also Daryl Falk, but Carl Giberson wrote a book that Francis Collins endorsed called Saving Darwin, where Giberson explicitly says that, you know, evolution, in a Darwinian sense of evolution, we were never morally innocent or good. We were basically selfish to begin with, because evolution is trying to survive at all costs. And so there was nothing to fall from. In other words, we were botched and sinful and evil to begin with.
Which is the evolutionist paradigm, right? I mean,
correct. Yeah. And this wasn't a book that was for people to say, well, Collins didn't say that point, and that's true. Collins, though, endorsed that book and wrote a foreword to it.
Is it a bridge too far to say that theistic evolution is the worst of all possibilities? Because you are now blaming God for evolution.
I'd have to think about that, whether it's the worst of all possibilities, but it is a pretty bad synergy. It doesn't really fit. And it really does call, and if you look in people's personal lives of the people who adopt that, sadly, it often doesn't stay with that. Because once you have to compromise God's sovereignty, once you have to compromise God's goodness, things follow from that. And so one of the stories I tell, you know, I have a chapter about the slippery slope. You know, people often dismiss the slippery slope, but I think that if you take your cues from the culture and the culture is going down into the ground, then you're going to slide right along with it. And so in the modern debates over intelligence, I say in the 1990s, one of the key figures, one of the key opponents of people like Phil Johnson or Michael Behe was a physicist at Calvin University, Howard Van Til. And he was trying to say, well, you know, there was God's design, but it was all front-loaded and really didn't play out into anything else. And he was trying to create a third way, still cited today. But what people don't actually say, in fact, as of just a few years ago, I was on a platform with Carl Giberson where he was citing this as how an Orthodox evangelical could embrace Darwinian theory. But the sad truth is that Howard Van Til, by the time he retired from Calvin, was then describing himself as a free thinker. He was no longer evangelical. And then by the time he died just a couple of years ago, he had gone all the way to an utter materialist. He actually wrote an essay that he was believed in a comprehensive naturalistic worldview, basically without the need of any creator at all. So in his own personal life, at least, that was just a stopping point, and it wasn't very solid. And Carl Giberson himself is very sad. He hasn't gone quite full, at least publicly, the way Howard Van Til, but one of his last books was published by the Unitarian Universalist Association, and it raises questions that, you know, Jesus may not have even been divine, that was something Paul created. And poor Carl Giberson is on the same tragic slope as, I think, Howard Van Til.
Stay right there. We'll be back soon to rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Dr. John West. What if American culture isn't collapsing because of crusading secularists? What if it's failing because many leading Christians identify more with secular elites than with their fellow believers? Those are the provocative questions posed by John West in his book, Stockholm Syndrome Christianity, which exposes how influential Christian leaders are siding with their anti-Christian cultural captors on everything from biblical authority and science to sex, race, and religious liberty. To receive your copy of Stockholm Syndrome Christianity, Why America's Christian Leaders Are Failing and What We Can Do About It, call 888-7000-CRI and make a special fiscal year-end gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Has God spoken? Are the words of Scripture merely human in origin, or are they in fact the very words of God Himself? 3 years in the making, and based on two decades of research and reflection, Hank Hanegraaff's monumental book, Has God Spoken?, answers what is surely the most important question facing our world. In Has God Spoken? Memorable Proofs of the Bible's Divine Inspiration, Hank counters the contentions of the Bible attackers and clearly shows that belief in the Holy Scriptures is not a guess or wishful thinking. It is the only logical conclusion after an honest examination of overwhelming evidence. Order Has God Spoken from the Christian Research Institute by calling 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Equip.org. The Soviet Red Army won the Battle of Stalingrad. It appeared at first the Nazi war machine would secure the victory, but the Soviets battled back from near certain defeat with extraordinary courage and resoluteness to turn the tide of the battle and ultimately the war. The lesson is that both men and material, people and provisions played a critical role. Willingness to fight and munitions in the arsenal were pivotal. Our contemporary battle for truth against anti-Christian secularists raises the stakes above the significance of Stalingrad. CRI likewise needs military partners willing to stand for truth, along with the financial means to accomplish the mission. Stand with us during the key month of June to end the fiscal year in a position of strength. Call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition is the comprehensive collection of the most often asked questions Hank Hanegraaff has received throughout his four decades as host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. With more than 500,000 copies already in print, this newly revised and expanded Collector's Edition helps seekers and skeptics alike sort through the truth on topics such as reliability of the Bible, religions and cults, the resurrection and afterlife, and many more issues vital to a better understanding of God in Christ and our relationship to Him. To receive your copy of the Complete Bible Answer Book, Collector's Edition, Revised and Expanded, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit us at equip.org.
Now here again are Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Dr. John West, as they continue their conversation.
Carl Giberson himself is very sad. He hasn't gone quite full, at least publicly, the way Howard Van Til, but one of his last books was published by the Unitarian Universalist Association, and it raises questions that, you know, Jesus may not have even been divine, that was something Paul created. And that, I mean, just poor Carl Giberson is on the same tragic slope as, I think, Howard Van Til.
Frankie Schaeffer as well.
Frankie Schaeffer is another really sad, particularly poignant, because as I said, I dedicated my book to Francis Schaeffer, and it's very sad at how, you know, he started, you know, one way, then he gravitated a little bit, and then he was going to a church where he was saying, well, I go, I don't really believe it, but it sort of is mysterious, and so that gives my life meaning. Then it was, I'm an atheist who believes that God doesn't exist, but then sometimes I do, he, she, or it exists, and sometimes I think he doesn't. And so it's just, so he's an atheist who sort of believes in God. What does that mean? And then more recently, he's just, you know, on the pro-life thing, to overturn Roe v. Wade, which until nearly the very end of his flipping, he was still saying, you know, Roe v. Wade was wrong. But then when it actually got overturned, oh, this is one step away from, this is Ayatollah Khomeini territory. This is theocracy. This is, I mean, it's just, he's really sad, you know.
Yeah, you have on the one hand, the Apostle Paul saying in Romans chapter 2, God's eternal power, divine nature, clearly seen through what has been made so that men are without excuse. And then you have this capitulation to the evolutionary paradigm, which seems to be at the base of most of the issues that we're facing today. If you dig down deep enough, you find that the evolutionary paradigm becomes the foundation on which all of these isms are built.
Yes. And I, you know, we get into that in sexuality and race and a lot of other things. And I think that's true. Let me just say with, before we go on from Collins, is that these arguments about Collins' views on creation were really clear. But a lot of Christians were so enamored by someone who was, well, he's on the cover of Time magazine, that they weren't willing to pay attention to it. And I think the tragic cost of that is, so Collins was picked to be the head of the NIH under Obama. But how did he govern in there? And the thing is, the things that I'm about to talk about now have created consternation, but you could go back pre-Obama and you'll find some of these things in Collins' record, but people didn't want to focus on it. So then you got Christians supporting him to be at the NIH. Well, what is his record there? It's basically indistinguishable from a secular materialist. He spent millions of our tax dollars to create a national tissue bank at the University of Pittsburgh that harvested aborted baby parts from aborted babies up to 42 weeks in gestation. I mean, that's just flat out infanticide, to do medical experiments. For example, one of the medical experiments funded also by the NIH was to take the scalps from these little babies and graft them into mice. That's not great. But the thing is, where do you, if you had read his book, The Language of God, and read the appendix to it, you would have known that he didn't defend the idea that life begins at conception. He wasn't willing to say, he really dissed that. So that predated his time in government service. And so what he did in government service followed that, you know, earlier capitulation. And that's really tragic. But it wasn't just that. So, the one other thing about abortion is somehow maybe he felt he must have known that it wasn't completely kosher, because the only reason we know that we spent that money harvesting those aborted baby parts is because Francis Collins didn't want you to know. A group called Judicial Watch filed a public documents request, and the NIH refused. They had to go to court to force Francis Collins' NIH to divulge what they were spending their tax dollars on harvesting aborted baby parts. But then let's go over into the transgender madness. By the end of his tenure there, Collins was identifying himself in a letter that he wrote to all of the people who worked there as an ally and advocate, his words, of the LGBTQIA movement, and basically urging everyone, you know, in his employ that they have to be that. And he was sort of dismissive of himself as a white cisgender male. Now, cisgender is a terrible word, it's a put down for normal sexuality, but he was using that term. And then even worse, they spent millions of more dollars funding a hospital in Boston, a doctor in California that were promoting surgeries on young women, you know, cutting off breasts of, you know, teenage girls, filling kids with puberty blockers. So that was also, and we're even now we're finding out more grants. I mean, some of this has come out after he left, but there were grants that were done during his tenure. And then finally, of course, during COVID, you know, Christians had sincere differences of opinion. And so that's, I'm not challenging that. But during COVID, he demonized Christians who had sincere conscience-based objections to not take the COVID vax. And he also really promoted these really draconian mandates where tens of thousands of Christians of good conscience lost their jobs and livelihoods. And so what I fault him with is not that he, you know, pushed his view of what people should do, but he did it in a way that demonized fellow Christians who had sincere, and I would say in the light of history, serious qualms about some things, and he weaponized the Bible. So in clear biblical teachings, he wasn't willing to stand up on, like God is creator in the way, but in the when it came to COVID, he weaponized love thy neighbor, that if you weren't willing, if you had a conscience-based objection to the COVID vax, you were responsible. In one of the interviews he did, I think it was with MSNBC, maybe it was CNN, he basically said, yeah, you were responsible for the deaths of children.
One of the chapters that was so revealing to me was your chapter 3, Sexual Suicide. And by the way, the chapter titles are brilliant. But you talk about how Stockholm Syndrome Christians damaged the understanding of sex and gender. And you make the point that there's a direct connection between Darwinian evolution and what's happened with respect to the evolution with respect to ideas related to sex and gender. This is a very important chapter, and you make your very first point in this chapter, the horror of redefining marriage.
Yeah. Well, actually, I also, just to be clear, because I think the redefinition of marriage is a really, really central, but it's also a point I'm trying to make is that heterosexual promiscuity and heterosexual devaluation of marriage and heterosexual no-fault divorce are areas where the church compromised before. You can't just start with the redefinition of marriage, say, you know, being between two or three whomever people. You have to actually look, well, what were the compromises and the things that the church made that led up to that? Because you don't immediately graft on to same-sex marriage, or now I think people are discussing polyamory or stuff. You started with this many churches seeding grounds on outside of marriage heterosexual activity. And so I want to make that clear, because I think that is one of the distinctives. But you're right, the Darwinian case, people don't really understand that, you know, Darwin wrote a book called The Descent of Man, where he redefines morality as basically that which promotes survival in any given situation. And he has a whole discussion of marriage. And, you know, Darwin, in his 19th century proper Victorian view, I mean, would basically say that marriage, monogamous marriage, was that which we evolved to for 19th century Victorian society. So he was, in his own personal views, was fairly, you know, conventional and even conservative. But he adopts a really radical view of what sexual morality or any morality is and of sexual relations, that then when other people believe that, then that just took off. And so in marriage, the thing is, there's nothing particularly sacrosanct about monogamous marriage. He actually says that the original form of marriage, if you will, wasn't really marriage. It was communal sex, basically having sex with multiple partners, you know, all the time. And then, so depending, his point is, depending on what you need under the given environmental circumstances for survival and flourishing, that's what natural selection will pick. So yes, in our society right now, in his society, that happened to be monogamous marriage, but he really clearly said that depending on how circumstances change, which circumstances can also be technology, you invent the birth control pill, I mean, that's a change, then the dictates of what's moral, what's sexually moral, change. And many people know about Alfred Kinsey, but they don't understand that Alfred Kinsey was trained as an evolutionary biologist. And so when he wrote his influential book about sex in the human male, that really in the late 40s, but then 50s and 60s, helped feed the sexual revolution, he was coming at it with a Darwinian worldview, which is basically, well, if it exists somewhere in nature, if a practice exists somewhere, even in some niche in nature, it must have been favored by natural selection for that purpose. So it's all equally natural. You can't criticize it. And that really provided this scientific basis or argument that pushed a whole generation of sexologists that really set the stage ultimately for the redefinition of marriage and for the redefinition of biological sex and, you know, the denial of biological sex.
We'll have to stop here for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Join us again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Dr. John West. Our unwavering mission at the Christian Research Institute is to defend and proclaim the faith once for all given to the saints and equip believers to live as genuine followers of the Lord Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your special fiscal year-end gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of the book by John West, Stockholm Syndrome Christianity, Why America's Christian Leaders Are Failing and What We Can Do About It. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI. Once again, that's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. And you can also write CRI, Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters, life matters more. God spoken? Are the words of Scripture merely human in origin, or are they in fact the very words of God Himself? 3 years in the making and based on two decades of research and reflection, Hank Hanegraaff's monumental book, Has God Spoken?, answers what is surely the most important question facing our world. In Has God Spoken? Memorable Proofs of the Bible's Divine Inspiration, Hank counters the contentions of the Bible attackers and clearly shows that belief in the Holy Scriptures is not a guess or wishful thinking. It is the only logical conclusion after an honest examination of overwhelming evidence. Order Has God Spoken? From the Christian Research Institute by calling 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Equip.org.